When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 438, and today we are talking about books being released on November 14th, 2023, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Jen Northington, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. Jen, hello!
Hello!
How's it going?
Good! You can't get rid of me. I'm back.
That's all right.
Vanessa got COVID, womp womp, and is still recovering.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, send me your notes. Put me in, coach. I will go talk to Liberty about books.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I had COVID recently, and I have long COVID, and it's like, I feel better, and then all of a sudden I feel worse. You know, it just kind of rattles around because of my immune system. So, you know, and also it's the end of the year, so we're going to start doing shows of, like, best books and gift books and all this stuff. So we're just kind of going to do, like, a mishmash today of you're going to talk about a couple books that came out today. I'm going to talk about some of my favorite books of the year that need more attention, I think.
Yes, I have two of those, too.
It also frees up more space for me to talk about more of my favorite books on the, you know, other favorite book shows. I'm diabolical that way. And just as long as we're talking about books, that's like all I really care about. So, because it's my favorite thing to do. So speaking of books or book related things, and of course we have to roll it into cats as well, because that's how that works.
Obviously.
In June of last year, I got a card catalog, like a actual old library card catalog, wood drawers. Amazing, right? Like every book lover's dream. You know, it's huge. It weighs 1,000,000 pounds. It's in my house. It has like 60 drawers, right? So this was like in June of 2022. Well, two nights ago, the cats suddenly decided, just after a year and a half, that it's really fun to open and close all the drawers. So now, like, I lay on the couch at night and I read books on my television and the drawers are like opening, closing, opening, closing, opening, closing. Or like I come out and it's like that opening scene in Ghostbusters. Yeah. Just like drawers are open, things are hanging out the sides. And I'm just like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to buy like a long, you know, piece of piping or use some of those sticks that you put out for the plow guy, you know, to put through the handles so they'll stop. Or maybe they'll just open all of them at one time if I do that, you know?
Could, like, baby-proof them or magnetize them shut? I don't know.
It's a lot of work for 60 drawers.
That's a lot of drawers,
Like, you look at them over there, and they're, like, looking at each other, like, did you know this happened? I didn't know this happened. Like, isn't this fun? Like, let's do some more. They're, like, working as a, like, mastermind, mastermind team. Yeah, so that's what's been going on in my house the last couple of days.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like, could you not,
could
please?
You not?
And they're, like, sorry, no, we're going to keep doing this. So, today is episode 438. And the corresponding area code, the internet tells me, is Montreal, Quebec in Canada, which is cool. Have you ever been to Montreal?
I have. Yeah. I have.
It's a cool place.
It is a
cool couple
place.
Of times.
Yes.
Once in high school and then once, like, for my 30th birthday, which was a really long time ago. But I feel like I was just there. But yeah, it's a really cool place. And I had hot chocolate in a giant bowl, which was rad.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I get poutine every time I go to Canada, because obviously, and I'm never sad about it, ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never had it, but, you know, I know everybody loves it.
It's,
you know,
so
it's not, it's not part of my diet, but, like, I know. And I know that if I lived in Canada, especially if I lived in Montreal, I would probably just name all of my pets poutine.
Obviously. Like, obviously.
Like, all of, that would be a great name for a Canadian cat, I think. So,
yes.
Yeah. We're going to talk about books. Could you do us a favor, Jen, and tell us a little bit about the exciting new TBR developments?
Yes, we did it. We have paperbacks. It's
yeah.
so so exciting. So for all of our friends out there who hate carrying around big heavy hardcovers, or maybe you're on a budget but you still want physical books, or you want like a wider range of recommendations because there are many more paperbacks in the world than there are hardcovers, or all of the above, you can now get a paperback subscription from TBR, which is our tailored book recommendation service. You can also gift it. It's a great holidays gift. You can gift one installment or a whole year's worth. So all of the details are at mytbr.co, mytbr.co. You might even get me as your bibliologist. I don't do a ton of bibliologisting, but I do some, and it's pretty fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of hardcovers that you don't want to carry around, I spent the $45 to get the Barbara Streisand memoir.
Is it like 1,000 pounds?
Yes, because so I didn't really look much into it before.
Yeah,
you know, I got it because I was like, well, this is going to be a big deal this year, and I feel like as doing what I do, I mm-hmm. should read it. So I got a copy, and it's not, you wouldn't know that it's almost 1,100 pages. It's one of those books that is surprisingly small, but it weighs like 1,000,000 pounds. So because I was like, wow, $45, and like the Britney Spears memoir was like 270 pages, and it costs $33. You know, and I was like, wow. But it's over 1,000 pages long.
Wow.
Because last night I was like, oh, I think I'll just, you know, sit down and maybe read the Barbara book so I can talk about it on the show tomorrow. And I was like, nope.
Even you don't read that fast.
No. And I don't know anything about her, and I'm not that interested, you know, so that I was like, I can't do this tonight to myself.
It's too much.
Yeah. But we're going to talk about a couple more fun things. But first, we are going to hear from a sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Gallery Books. So Anna Green thought she was marrying Liam West for access to subsidized family housing while at UCLA, which is an interesting reason to marry someone, but you know, in this economy. So anyway, she signed divorce papers when the graduation caps were tossed, and she thought she was done. She wasn't. 3 years later, Anna is a starving artist living paycheck to paycheck while West is a Stanford professor. Now, he is part of a conglomerate. His family owns this mega grocery store chain. He's not interested in working for them, but he is interested in those greenbacks, honey, that come in the form of a $100 million inheritance. To get it, he has to be married for 5 years. That's where our girl Anna comes back into play. So the two will fake a marriage, but as he gets to know her and gets to appreciate the feisty, foul-mouthed, paint-splattered girl that she is, he'll begin to wonder if the money is worth the love of his life. Pick up The Paradise Problem by Christina Lauren to find out if it is. And thanks again to Gallery Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her soul family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more sus when he and Xu Wei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what? What's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romantasy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode.
All right. So, Jen, I have you here. And I don't think we've ever talked about this. Maybe we have. But yeah. I thought for a second we could talk about the Jen and Liberty origin story. Because I don't know if you remember it, but I certainly do.
So I'm wondering if our memories are going to match up. So I'm going to make you go first because okay. I'm not positive. I obviously remember meeting you, but I don't know if it was the first time or if there was another time. So you go first.
Okay. So in 2006, I worked at River Run Bookstore in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we opened a wing of that that was like a secondhand bookshop called Second Run. And I used to work in Second Run full time. And I had this idea where I wanted to do a readathon, like a 24-hour readathon where everyone stayed in the bookstore and we raised money for charity because it was like this really cozy space, right? So, you know, we advertised it. We got a bunch of people. It was really fun. We raised some money. And so I was working with Michelle Philgate, who, you know, everyone knows from the book world.
Yes.
We decided we wanted to go national the next time. So in 2007, we sent out press releases and Shelf Awareness picked it up and said they're inviting other indie bookstores to join them in 2007 to do this. And we got two responses online. We got one in a national like book blog and where they made fun of us and said it was such a stupid idea to have a readathon, which I thought was awful because we weren't doing anything harmful and just like raising money for charity. And we got an email from someone named Jen Northington at King's English who said, my bookstore is in as well. Yeah. And that was how you and I first met. God.
I had fully forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You were the only indie bookstore to reach out and say, yeah, let's do it.
So now I'm flashing back to that and I'm remembering I was saw it in Shelf Awareness and I was like, this is genius. Like, why didn't I have this idea?
Yeah. Like, we had high school students who took off class that day.
Yeah.
The next day. I can't remember what day of the week it was. It might have been a Saturday to a Sunday. They were missing something. Some people took off work. You know, like, who doesn't want to stay in a bookstore all day? We got free pizza and, like, coffee and donuts from local businesses, you know?
Yes.
And I can't remember. I don't think the blog is even in existence anymore that made fun of us. But, like, my feelings were hurt because I was like, we are not doing anything wrong. They're like, oh, this is just a lazy excuse to read. It's like, yeah.
Obviously.
Hello.
Hello. What is the problem? I see no issue here.
Yeah. So I thought I would just take us down that little trip down memory lane.
Amazing.
I think the first time that you and I met in person was at BEA.
That's what I was thinking about. Yes, I was thinking about it on like in person on the floor. But like I think what happened was between the readathon and then actually getting to meet at BEA, we became like besties on BookTurnet, early BookTurnet Twitter. And then it's, you know, now it's history. I had fully forgotten about the readathon. Thank you for bringing that back into my memory. That's amazing, Liberty.
Yeah. Amazing. And I will tell you, so I was in the indie bookseller calendar with my photo of me in the bathtub.
Yes.
And then I went to BEA that year, that same year, to do the event for the calendar. And that was the year that I got my tooth knocked out on the bus. So I showed up at BEA that day and I was so sad about having my tooth knocked out. And then I went to the party after and like three beers later, I was like, look at my tooth! Look at my tooth! Look at my tooth! Like everybody.
That's what I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
All right. Well, this was fun. But now we're going to talk about books. I am going to kick it off with one of my favorite books of the year, which, as I said, clears up a space for another favorite when we do the fiction show. This is Everybody Knows by Jordan Harper. This came out at the very beginning of the year. I was a huge fan of his last novel, She Rides Shotgun, which they just announced is going to become a film. And I was very excited about this. I loved it. This one is set in Los Angeles, and the main character is a woman named Mae Pruitt. She works for the most powerful Hollywood crisis PR firm. Her job is to make bad things go away. And not bad things that, like, help people, but, like, bad things that people have done. You know, like, crash cars, you know, fights in trashing hotel rooms. Like, she helps out celebrities who have been like, oops, I did this bad thing. Please make it go away. Mm. And, you know, it's a bad job and she's a bad person, you know, because that's what happens. But this one day she gets this call from her boss and he says that he needs to talk to her. It's really important and he can't talk to her in the office. He, like, won't say anything else about it. So she's like, whoa, what is happening? But before she can meet him, he is murdered on the street in front of a hotel. The police say it was like a random mugging killing, but May keeps thinking about how upset he was and how freaked out he was and how he needed to tell her something that she couldn't tell anyone and he couldn't discuss in the office. So she starts poking around And she uncovers this vast conspiracy of awfulness that's like more awful than anything she's ever had to deal with. And now, with the help of a former flame who is an ex-cop and who now hurts people for money, basically, he's a heavy, she's going to get to the bottom of it. And along the way, they're both going to take really hard looks at their lives, and they view figuring out what's going on and correcting the situation as a way to amend for their actions and change their ways. It's a really intense, like, just really intense page-turning redemption story. It's like, I call it LA Confidential for the 21st century because it's very much like that. It's just so, so great. I really want to see this one on the screen as well. Mm. And just content warnings for every bad thing that you can think of that would be swept under the rug. It's called Everybody Knows by Jordan Harper.
Nice. When I'm feeling strong, I will pick that up. Yeah, it was an interesting week to prep for, obviously also short notice, but I have been, I don't know about you, Liberty, but when I looked at my spreadsheet to find out how many books I had read this year, I was like, wow, it's like slightly more than half of what I read last year. I don't know what happened to me.
It all builds up. It's been really a long few years.
Yeah. And my focus is just shot. And so fiction has been hard for me, but I've been having some good luck with nonfiction lately. And this book that is out for this week, conveniently enough, I picked up and am pretty into right now. I haven't finished it yet, but I feel confident enough with it to go ahead and talk about it. It's Seek, How Curiosity Can Transform Your Life and Change the World by Scott Shigioka. And I, like, relatedly, why I have no focus, like, the world is a hard place. It always has been. It just feels like it's getting harder. And I am pretty exhausted of being freaked out all the time. So I am looking for any and all tools I can to feel like, you know, okay in my head. And Shigioka's, you know, thesis of this book is that curiosity can help with all of the issues that we're having right now. You know, this intense polarization and bigotry and prejudice and wars and, you know, all of the things that come from basically fear of people who are not like you. And curiosity can help with that. And it is literally a manual about how to be curious about people who are different from you. And what I super appreciate about this is that, you know, Shigioka is a person of color. He is gay. Like, he's identifies as spiritually queer on top of that. And so he knows firsthand, you know, what it's like to be the object of racism and homophobia and all of these things. And so he's not just like blithely being like, get out there and talk to people who are scary and want to like murder you. Like, no, no, no. This is very much about like, yeah, like finding the safe ways to have hard conversations and being safe and smart about it. And like, he also acknowledges how much energy this takes, especially if you are, you know, have identities that have been polarized or racialized or, you know, made the subject of, you know, bans. I mean, it's just so clear that he gets why this is not gonna always be possible and why it might not be safe, but also how we can do this and try to figure out like ways to, you know, be less afraid and more curious. And that's, I think, really valuable. I am definitely finding it helpful just in like thinking about how I approach the activism I do in my own community. And like, you know, some of my neighbors have signs in their yards that I'm not super jazzed about. And so it's like, okay, how can I, like, that's, I'd say for me to do that, you know, I'm like a white lady, so it's probably fine to at least start that conversation. And so this is helping me to think about how I might do that. So if this sounds like it might be useful for you, again, it's very mindful about what the costs of this kind of work can be, and it's full of practical advice on how to manage that and like do it in a way that is good for you and helpful. And so again, that's Seek, How Curiosity Can Transform Your Life and Change the World by Scott Shigioka.
Okay. I'm going to talk about another book that I loved that came out early this year. I have to say, I forgot to mention that this is a potpourri episode. I was very excited because I like on Jeopardy, they're like potpourri category. So today I was like, oh, potpourri episode, just like Jeopardy, because I'm, you know, such a Jeopardy nerd. Like when I get the final question correct and none of the contestants do, like I do like a lap around the house.
Yes.
Like, I'm just Liberty. Like, woo!
Okay, side note.
Okay.
So my partner, Roger, who you've met,
yeah,
is actually in the pool for Jeopardy this year.
Shut up.
Like, made it through several rounds of virtual interviews and screen tests and stuff. And, like, may never get the phone call, but might.
Oh, my goodness. So,
if that happens, you will hear about it.
That's incredible. And I he also works in theater. So, like...
He does.
He'll be great at it.
Yeah, he'll be so good. Yeah. He's very comfortable on camera because that's literally what he did for years, so...
Yeah. That's amazing.
I know.
My therapist is like, you know, one way that would help you out with your money problems is you should go on Jeopardy. And I'm like, yeah, no. She's like, but you're so good at it. I'm like, I'm just like, I watched Quiz Lady with Awkwafina the other day. And she's saying like, it's a difference between sitting on the couch and playing and being, and that's me.
Yes.
Like I would, they like show like the three Jeopardy contestants and there'd be two contestants and then just a podium because I would be hiding down behind it. Like, no. They'd be like, let's just see our contestants, Jen, Roger, and no. Yeah. But I love Jeopardy. And I love Amy Schneider.
Yes.
Like, Amy forever. She's my favorite. I follow her on Instagram and her trivia Tuesdays and just like, oh, love her. Anyway, so potpourri, that was very exciting. I had a little Jeopardy moment, that was exciting too. So this book that came out earlier this year that I love is called A New Race of Men from Heaven by Shitali Sen, with an introduction from Danielle Evans. This is a fantastic collection of stories. There's not a lot. There's five, I think, or six. But it won the Mary McCarthy Prize in Short Fiction. There's a story about a washed-up author who gets a surprise when people start praising him for an amazing book that was published under his name that he did not write. Mm-hmm. He does not know who wrote this, but he's getting all this praise for it. There's one about a lesbian couple that moves to a small town where they discover their neighbors have really opposing political views. Like you were just mentioning some of those signs in their yard. Mm-hmm. Not so great. But there's one about a businessman who goes on a work trip. And while he's eating in a restaurant, a young boy goes missing and he gets involved in the search. Another about a widow in India who leaves her family behind to start a new life with relatives in America. They're fantastic. And Danielle Evans, as I mentioned, writes the foreword or maybe the afterword. I can't remember now. But if you haven't read Danielle Evans, like, legend, like, her short stories are some of the best I've ever read. So I definitely picked this up because it had her name on the cover. And I was so glad that I did because I also enjoyed all the stories in it. So this is A New Race of Men from Heaven by Shitali Sen with a foreword by Danielle Evans. Or an afterword. I don't know why I said foreword. One of those.
One of those.
Beginning or end. One of those. It'll be a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Love a collection. Love a collection. Yes. All right. So my second book that is out as of the time of this episode is also nonfiction. I was looking at it and then Vanessa, I was like, oh, you know, if you have a book you want me to talk about, like, send me your notes. And she sent me like three pages of notes about this book. And I was like, great. So it's just as good as I thought it might be. It's Eyeliner by Zara Conkier. And it is a cultural history, which, like you, honestly, I love cultural histories. They are my favorite. And especially doing something like Eyeliner, like what a fascinating topic, right? And I will say, I don't wear much makeup. I never really have. I never learned how. But when I, especially when I lived in New York, I was like very, like New York is so intimidating to like walk out your door and be like, oh god, I don't look like a fashion boy, like what do I do? So I literally would not leave my house without eyeliner on when I lived in New York City. When I moved away from there, I was like, phew, I can never wear makeup again, and now it's just for special occasions. But like, eyeliner was the thing I felt most confident and comfortable with. So I have a personal connection to the subject. And then Hunkier is also the editor of Our Women on the Ground, which is a collection of essays from Arab women journalists who report on the Arab world. So like super relevant to our lives. And obviously eyeliner has a huge cultural role in the Arab world, as well as lots of other, you know, cultures. And so like Vanessa was talking about, you know, how it's in Mexican American Chola culture in her notes. And, you know, Hunkier talks to, you know, drag queens and dancers in India and geishas in Japan and people who have started their own like makeup lines now, and then things that like about Nefertiti and, you know, eyeliner in history. And I just can't wait to get this from the library and dive into it. Everything that Vanessa has said about it is like a rave, which, you know, yes, like give me all of the past, future, current information about eyeliner. Apparently also, I'm super excited about this. The author has an Instagram where you can see photos of some of her interview subjects. So I definitely am going to be checking that out. We'll leave a link in the show notes. But if you are like one of those people who loves a micro history and loves learning about things that have a through line through many different cultures, this is definitely for you. If you have a friend who, like so many people, you like are going to have to pry their eyeliner out of their cold dead hands, like this would be a great gift also for that person for the holidays. I'm just saying. So again, that's Eyeliner, A Cultural History by Ksara Hunkier.
It's a big book, too. It's like 350 pages.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot to talk about with eyeliner.
Yeah.
So much to talk about.
Last week, when you said to me, I want to read this book, but I haven't received the galley yet.
Yeah.
Like, after we stopped talking, I was like, oh, I have this.
Oh!
and I was like, but I probably shouldn't. I was, like, trying to find another book for the show, but I was like, that would be like a jerk move to like read it to.
Would be such a jerk move, Liberty.
So I'm glad that Vanessa gave you notes and you got to talk about it anyway, because I do only wear eyeliner.
Right.
So, you know, and I am a monster because I've forgotten that I even had it. but yeah, it sounds awesome. I looked it up the other day after we talked and I was like, 350 pages about eyeliner.
Like, woo-hoo! Give it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So my next pick is going back to fiction in one of my favorite novels of the year, which I loved this book. I know it was sort of polarizing, but I loved it. And it's called My Murder by Katie Williams. This is a literary sci-fi mystery in a future where people can be regenerated when they die. Their consciousness is uploaded into a new version of their body, kind of like Mickey 7. Like, if you die, they put all this goop in a thing and they make a new one of you and put your brain in it, and it works just fine. It can't happen to everyone because, of course, you know, it costs a lot of money. So basically, the wealthy or people with very special circumstances can be regenerated. And now Lou, the main character, is a wife and a new mother who becomes the fifth victim of a serial killer who is caught very shortly after she is murdered. Because there is so much outrage over this case, the murder of five young women, the company that makes new people decides to regenerate all five of them to win public favor. So just like that, Lou is brought back, and you're just brought back, and you're dropped right back into your life where you were. Like, you were just away for a little while. Minus your memories of the last couple of weeks before you die. So this is very traumatic because you've died. And especially like these women, they've all been murdered, and they have a support group where they talk about it and their trauma, and they all deal with it in different ways. One of the women is consciously doing the opposite of every single thing that she would have done if she hadn't been murdered, because she thinks that the way that she behaved before she died led to her demise. So like she's going to do everything differently. One woman is trying to capitalize on their celebrity because everybody knows the story of these five women. Lou, also, she feels different. She feels kind of indifferent to her life. Her baby cries now when she holds her. She's lost interest in her job. She is like a virtual hugger. She talks to people in a virtual room and gives them virtual hugs. And she also has a bag in her closet that she doesn't understand. So Lou is trying to sort out just what previous Lou was up to in the weeks before she was murdered. It's an excellent deconstruction of the fetishization of the murder of women and the rise of interest in true crime. It's also a book about second chances. Like, if you were given a second chance, like, would you keep doing the same things that you did? It's excellent. It's called My Murder, and it's by Katie Williams.
Nice.
All right. Jim, what do you have for us next?
So I have a book. I was so glad when you were like, let's do potpourri, because I did have, you know, some books to talk about, but then others that I was like, well, but if only. So there are a couple books that I feel like I just didn't see enough love for. So I'm going to shout two of them out.
Awesome.
First one is Our Hideous Progeny by C.E. McGill. This came out in May, and I loved so much. I mean, the cover is so good. I love the premise of this. It is sort of a sequel, if you will, to Frankenstein. The main character, Mary, is the great-niece of Victor Frankenstein, of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And she knows that, like, her uncle was, like, kind of a weirdo and disappeared in strange circumstances, but she doesn't know anything other than that. And she is a paleontologist, and she is a woman in, you know, 1850s London in Britain, where that's, like, not super cool. So mostly she's seen as a helper to her husband, who is also, like, trying to make a name for himself as a paleontologist. Both obsessed with dinosaurs. It's adorable. But her husband is kind of not, like, he's kind of a wastrel. Like, he's very smart, but in, like, terms of, like, book smart, but not so much in terms of anything else. And so they don't have much money. They're really struggling. And then Mary finds some old papers in an attempt to, like, dig up anything that could be useful to them that are basically, like, the manuscript from Victor about what he did and his experiments. And she's like, oh, this is it. We're going to make our name. But instead of working on people, because they're paleontologists, they try to make a dinosaur. It's amazing. I mean, I will say there are content warnings for, you know, animal experimentation. There's also violence against women, homophobia, and a reference to miscarriage. And so, you know, there's a lot that's, like, difficult about this book, but it's also a really enjoyable, like, are they going to do it? What happens? Are they going to be successful? And then there's this rival who's, like, trying to block them, but then also maybe they owe money, and it's all very complicated. And there is a queer love story underneath it all. And so there's just so much that's going on. I loved the ending. I loved everything about this concept. Like, I don't know. Like, I've been to London and I've seen the Crystal Palace and the grounds where they did this, you know, fair and, like, created these statues of what they thought dinosaurs would look like at this time. Like, that's literally part of the plot of this book. And so it was so cool to, like, sort of get transported back to that time period in history and, like, the conversations that were happening around those models and, like, who thought they were right and who thought they were wrong. And, like, how do you even recreate what a dinosaur looks like in 1850? Like, what is the theory that you're going to use? So it's really fascinating, both from, like, a history and science standpoint, and then it's a great story. It's just a great story. So I would love to see more people pick this one up. Again, that is Our Hideous Progeny by C.E. McGill.
All right. I have Mary Shelley thoughts, but first we are going to hear from another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her adapt dazzling perfection to give a reading. Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawk on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or if The Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so I'm going to tie this back to quizzes because I mentioned I love Jeopardy. But I also watch Switch. I also watch Masterminds. I also watch The Chase. I watch all of the quiz shows. And when you watch as many as I do, you begin to realize they use a lot of the same trivia on these shows. And they talk about Mary Shelley a lot because, you know, Frankenstein, huge book. But they talk about all the time. They're like, she was 19 when she wrote this. She had kids. Mm-hmm. She was married. It's like one of the greatest. And I'm like, just drag me. Like, it's the only time when I'm watching quizzes. I'm like, yes, she was 19 and she wrote Frankenstein and she already had a family. And like, oh my goodness. She got a lot done before I did at that age. Or this age.
Before anybody.
Like, wow. Yes. Just amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, this ties in nicely with my last book because it is also about monsters. I love Monstrillo by Gerardo Samano Cordova. I think I might have mentioned this on Backlist or maybe in an article on Book Riot recently or something because it came out in March, but it's definitely a horror book and it needed some Halloween time love. It is a horror story about a mother's love and grief. Magos is devastated when her 11-year-old son Santiago dies. He was very sick and he passes away. And now Magos remembers stories that she heard growing up in Mexico that if you remove a part of someone you love and keep it in a jar when they die, it will return to the form of that person. So in her grief, she does just that. She takes a small piece of Santiago's lung and she puts it in a jar and leaves her home and returns to her family home in Mexico. Now, the realist in me is like, how did she get a jar with a piece of human flesh through security on the airport, on the airplane? But hey, whatever. We just got to go with it. So she goes to Mexico. She keeps this jar in the closet, but soon it starts to grow and then it starts to move. And then it needs to eat. Now, Magos is delighted, even though she knows it's not right. Like, as any movie or a television show or book will tell you, people never come back the same when you do these kinds of things. You know, Dawn Summers almost learned the hard way. If you remember, you know, she narrowly dodged that on Buffy. But, you know, she can't help it. She loves this little flesh lump monster fiercely and will soon do anything to protect it. And as the book goes on, we follow, I call him Santiago 2 Electric Boogaloo, as he grows and grows into a person. It's an excellent debut about grief and love, and it's just so beautifully written and it's just amazing. There's also queer love, and like I mentioned, it's a horror story too. So just everybody should read this one. It's Monstrillo by Gerardo Samano Cordova.
Nice. That sounds intense.
Yeah, it's great. I can't wait to see what he does next.
Exciting. All right. Speaking of grief, just to like bring it down. No, this book is so good, y'all. I know, you know, I've been obsessed with this book. Like back when I was still on social media, I was like posting about it. And I talked about it on an episode of All the Back, or not All the Backlist. We don't call it that. Backlist to the Future is what SFF yeah calls our backlist episodes. So it is Maroons by Adrienne Marie Brown, who I have read nonfiction by, including Emergent Strategy, which is an amazing collection of essays. Highly recommend. And I was in a bookstore and I saw this book and I was like, I didn't know there. What? Where did this come from? I didn't know about it. And I read the whole thing and then I discovered that it's actually
surprise
a series called Grievers. And there's no reason I shouldn't have figured this out because it's like literally on the back flap, but I was skimming and not paying attention. But I will tell you that, A, I mean, you should obviously read this in order, probably. I just got the first book in the mail yesterday. But I did read it as a standalone. It totally worked as a standalone because that's how good Adrienne Marie Brown is. I'm going to give some content warnings beforehand because the plot of this book, you know, might be triggering to some folks. It is very much about grief, losing just tons of people that you love. It's also an epidemic book, and it is about racism. So, you know, FYI. So the plot of this is that there has been a horrible epidemic that started in Detroit and has, you know, sort of been contained because they literally just like walled off the city. And they call it Syndrome H8, and it has pretty much only affected the African-American community. And Dune is one of the survivors, and she is very, I mean, just hugely grief-stricken. She has made it a project to, like, you know, go out into this ruined city. She's scavenging food in freezers, you know, and is looking for other survivors, but also trying not to get murdered because, you know, there's, I mean, it's just a shell of its former self and you don't know who's safe and who's not. And there's, she's still afraid she might get sick, even though she hasn't so far. She doesn't know why she survived and other people didn't. And she, through the course of those travels, you know, begins to interact with some other folks. I don't want to say very much about the plot because I think that one of the beauties of this novel is like the slow discovery of what life is like for Dune, and, you know, all of the struggles that she has to go through. So instead, I will tell you that this book has magic, maybe, question mark, like things are growing that there's no explanation for, like nature is coming back in strange ways, strange things are happening, some people are like, maybe, like, are they magical, are they not magical, question mark. There's an amazing sort of post-pandemic utopia moment. There's just so much that I loved about this book. These characters are so real, so beautifully envisioned. The landscape that they're moving through just is completely comes to life. And it's tackling so many important and difficult and just really hard questions with so much grace and compassion. And it's got some really funny moments. Like, it's just, I like, it might literally be a perfect book to me, y'all. Like, this book is so good. And I just, I'm so excited to read the first one. There's a third one coming, and I would love to see this series get some more notice. It's definitely for fans of like Station Eleven, you know, maybe Chain Gang All-Stars, like those kinds of books. This is for you. So again, that's Maroons by Adrienne Marie Brown, but it's actually number two in the Grievers series. So read the first one first, and the first one is called Grievers.
Awesome. And they're not very big.
No, they're
these
short.
Cute little CD size books, or CD case size books, I should say.
Yeah.
So, all right. So those are just some books. That's all I have to say. Usually I say, like, those are books that we've read. You know, those are books that we've read and loved. They've come out all over the place throughout the year and today. And now I'm going to tell you about a few notable books coming out in the rest of November, because as I mentioned, we're going to start our special episodes beginning next week with our gift guide episode. So these are just a few books I thought you might be excited to hear about that are coming for the rest of the month. Starting with Day by Michael Cunningham. Cunningham is the author of Specimen Days and The Hours, which everyone knows the movie with Nicole Kidman and Meryl Streep and Ed Harris. This one is about a couple's relationship at the start of the pandemic and their quarantine in their home and how it evolves as the years go on. Critical hits, writers playing video games, edited by Carmen Maria Machado and J. Robert Lennon. Speaking of Chain Gang All-Stars, this has essays from writers such as Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya, Alyssa Washuda, Charlie Jane Anders, Alexander Chi, Hanif Adurakib, and Larissa Pham about playing video games. Now a shout out to a former rioter coming next week, I think, or maybe even today. Gator Country, Deception, Danger, and Alligators in the Everglades by Rebecca Renner. I remember she had started working on this when she was at Book Riot. They're calling it David Grand meets Susan Orlean, and it's about alligator poaching in Florida.
Nice.
System Collapse, The Murderbot Diaries, number 7. Yay! By Martha Wells. As I said, this is the 7th Murderbot book. This is the 2nd full-length novel. The 5th book was also a full-length novel. This is, you know, aside from, you know, Gideon the 9th, this is my very favorite series of the last decade. I've read these books several times. I love them so much. This one is just as fun. About Murderbot, a sentient security bot who hates social interaction and loves streaming shows. You don't have to read them in order. There are a lot of details in each one, and, you know, I would recommend reading them in order.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to. I mean, you don't ever have to read anything in order. You know?
Right.
Take a book, put it in your pants, super glue it to your car. I don't care what you do with it. Do them out of order. But, like, I think it would make your experience better if you do read the books in order, because there's a definite progression to Murderbot's journey. Just so good. Speaking of series that people love, the 4th book in the popular Before the Coffee Gets Cold series is out today. It's called Before We Say Goodbye by Toshikazu Kawaguchi. This is about the time travel cafe where people go in and they get a cup of coffee and they can travel back in time, but only for a very short amount of time and just enough to get back before your coffee gets cold. The New Naturals by Gabriel Bump. This is a new novel from the author of Everywhere You Don't Belong, which won awards, I believe. This one is set in Massachusetts. It's about a grieving mother who decides to start an underground safe haven in an abandoned restaurant. A True Account, Hannah Massary's Sojourn Amongst the Pirates, written by herself, by Catherine Howe. Catherine Howe has written lots of great historical fiction. Her debut was The Physic Book of Deliverance Dane, which is when I discovered that she and I were both related to Elizabeth Howe, one of people murdered during the Salem witch trials. She's also Anderson Cooper's co-author on a lot of his books. And this one, A True Account, is about a young woman in Boston who becomes one of the most feared pirates on the seas. Pirates are hot right now. The Kingdom of Sweets, a novel of the Nutcracker by Erica Johansson. If Erica Johansson sounds familiar, that is because she is the author of the Queen of the Tearling series. I'm just going to come out and say this. I hate the Nutcracker. I didn't like it as a kid. What? I don't like it now. Like, I'm just like, whatever. Yes, I'm a monster. But I really want to read this one because it's like a dark fantasy retelling of the Nutcracker for adults.
Listen, so, the Nutcracker is messed up and I love it. It is not. Like, this is correct. It should be a dark fantasy retelling because that story is a mess. And I love the Nutcracker.
I used to work in the box office at a theater, and the only thing they would have every year on the schedule was a production of the Nutcracker.
Okay.
And people are nuts for the Nutcracker, y'all. Like, if they didn't get their tickets or the right seat, like, I mean, it was, I had no idea until I started working there, like, just how many people love the Nutcracker. I do not. But
fair enough.
I'm going to read this book. And also out, Didn't See That Coming by Jesse Q. Sutanto, which I believe it makes this her 4th book released this year. You know, there was Vera Wang's Advice for Murderers. There was a thriller that I talked about on the show a couple months ago that I'm forgetting the name of. I'm Not Done With You Yet, I think. And there was another one. This is a follow-up to one of my favorite YA novels of 2022, which was called Well, That Was Unexpected. This one is about a gamer girl who finds out that the boy she has been chatting with in-game on an MMORPG goes to her new school, but she can't talk to him because he thinks she's a boy because she's been pretending to be one online to avoid harassers, because as we know, girls get a lot of harassment in game. So she doesn't know what she's going to do about that. So those are some books coming out in November. Jen, what are you going to read next?
So this is a book that I meant to read when it came out, and then I didn't because life. And so I finally got my library hold. It's The Book of Lost Saints by Daniel Jose Older. I have read his urban fantasy books, but this is a multi-generational Cuban-American family story. And I mean, I love all of those words together. Like, that just sounds like it's exactly my jam. And Older is a great writer, so I'm really excited to finally get to this one.
I feel like that one was just such a blip on the radar, and it came out around the same time as The Inheritance of
Orchidia Divina.
Yeah, and
yes,
that one,
Zoraida Cordova.
Yeah, it got tons of attention, and this one was just kind of, and like, Daniel Jose Older is insanely prolific. I mean, just like so many books, but like, it was great, and I feel like it should have gotten more attention, so I'm glad that
you're there you go,
shouting it out. I'm actually halfway through The Friday Afternoon Club, a family memoir by Griffin Dunn. I have been on a celebrity memoir tear. I don't know why. I think it's like my equivalent of like you're needing nonfiction right now.
Yeah.
I couldn't read it all when I was at the height of COVID, like sickness. And I've just started reading memoirs. And, you know, I love reading a memoir where it's like, you know, I had nothing when I was a child and I had this amazing talent and I made all this and I bought my mom a house and I bought my grandmother a house and, you know, I bought my dog a house. You know, I love those kind of stories. Griffin Dunn, if you don't know who he is, he's an actor and a writer. He was in Who's That Girl with Madonna, which classic, right? Mm. Horrible film. Amazingly good. He was in After Hours. His father was Dominic Dunn, who covered the OJ trial and he wrote for Vanity Fair. He was also a Hollywood producer before that. His uncle was John Dunn, the writer, who was married to Joan Didion. His sister was in the first Poltergeist movie before she was murdered by her boyfriend, which was a very famous celebrity trial. And he came, both his parents came from tons of money. And he has these wild stories about all these famous people. They live next to the Crawfords, who, you know, was John F. Kennedy's sister. Mm. Sean Connery saved him from drowning in a pool one time. you know, he just, it's very different than the books that I usually read about, but like, it doesn't keep them from pain and loss, you know, like money can only insulate you so much. And it's just fascinating. I mean, he has like his grandfather was the first person to perform open heart surgery. Like, it's bananas. I could talk about this book for a whole episode and I've only read half of it. So it comes out in June. I can't find it anywhere online. I kind of am beginning to think that maybe I have imagined it because I have a fever. So like maybe this book isn't real, but so far it's incredible. Wow. So that is it for us today. Thank you so much for joining me, Jen. Taking little trips down memory lane.
Yeah, so fun. Always a delight.
You can visit mytbr.co to find out more about TBR and sign up for yourself or get it as a gift. It only takes a few minutes. That's mytbr.co. And a thank you to our sponsors. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. Tell us about your area code. Tell us about how much you love the Nutcracker. It's fine. I know I'm a monster. Jen, where can people find you online?
So I'm taking my pretty annual, at this point, holiday social media break. But when I come back, you can find me on Blue Sky and Tumblr as Jen IRL, J-E-N-N-I-R-L, or on Instagram as I am Jen IRL.
Awesome. And I mostly hang out on Instagram at Franz and Comes Alive. If you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is you get your podcast and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and we thank you so, so, so very much. As much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com, and don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.